many times we listen to the music of great composers and think to ourselves, they had such great talent. He must have been a genius. I can't believe he wrote such beautiful music. I sure wish I had as much talent as he did. It is true that these composers had talent, but too often we forget the many hours, days, months, and years that they spent working very hard to write the music that was buried deep inside of them. Franz Joseph Haydn was a genius, but that doesn't mean that composing was easy for him. Thomas Edison, the inventor of the light bulb, once said that genius is 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration. Haydn worked very, very hard. Franz Joseph Haydn was born on March 31st, 1732, in a small Austrian village in Europe. Matthias and Maria Haydn, his parents, were very hard workers. Matthias was a wheelwright who made all the wheels for the people of the village. He was also the Markrichter. The Markrichter had an important position, for he kept the roads repaired, made sure people went to church, and kept the townspeople from drinking or gambling too much. Can you imagine receiving a knock on the door Sunday morning by a Markrichter making sure that you were in church? Maria was a cook in the nobleman's castle before she got married. Now, a nobleman was either the king, the prince, or a relative of the king or prince, someone who had royal blood, and that's what a nobleman is, or an aristocrat is another word for that. Anyway, Maria was a cook in a nobleman's castle before she got married. After she got married, she was busy keeping both her family and the house very clean and tidy. There was so much work to be done that little Franz Joseph was taught at a young age to help with the chores. The family knew how to work, but they also knew how to have fun. In the evenings after the work was done, there was no TV to turn on. There was no stereo. What do you suppose they did at night? Well, the family would gather around the fire, and Matthias Haydn, the father, he loved to sing. He would accompany himself on the harp. He didn't know how to read music, so he learned the folk songs by ear. Matthias and Maria taught their children these folk songs, and everyone sang happily together. Little Franz Joseph had a beautiful, clear voice. He loved music. One night, he made a pretend violin from two sticks and played along as the family sang. His parents were very proud of their son. He was very smart, and they hoped he'd have a chance to make a living using his head instead of his hands. One day, a relative named Johann Matthias Franck came to the village. He was a principal of a school in Hainsburg. Because the school was for choir boys who sang in the church, Franck was also in charge of the music for the church. That evening, as the Haydns gathered together to sing, Franck watched intently as Franz Joseph played away on his stick violin. He was even more excited to hear Haydn's clear voice join in the singing. This young boy had talent. Later that night, Franck approached Matthias and Maria with a proposition to let the young Haydn go back to Hainburg with him. In Hainburg, the boy would be able to get a much better education, and Franck would give him music lessons. Matthias and Maria listened quietly. Here was an opportunity that they had hoped for Franz Joseph to go to a good school, but he was not even 6 years old yet. And Maria knew that if he left now, she would not see him very often. What would you do? Would you go? Surely that was a difficult decision for Franz Joseph's parents. Surely his mother thought, would Franck's wife take good care of her little boy? Matthias knew that Franck would expect payment for Joseph's room and board. Both parents knew they would miss their bright little boy very much. After much discussion, they decided to send their little boy to Hainburg with Franck, for it was the only way he could be something besides a wheelwright like his father. Sadly, Joseph left his family the next day. The trip to Hainburg was very exciting. There were ancient Roman ruins glittering along the way. You can see those today if you go to Austria and Hungary. The city itself was so large and overwhelming to this young country boy. The church with its large organ was more beautiful than anything he had ever seen. There were so many things to see and so many stories to hear. Intrigued and fascinated, Joseph eagerly began his new life. However, he soon found that his life in Hainburg was not quite what he thought it would be. School was hard. Does that sound familiar? Frank had too many responsibilities to be patient with boys who didn't learn quickly, and Mrs. Frank certainly did not keep her house and family in the clean condition that Haydn's mother had. Joseph tried very hard to keep himself clean, but that's an impossible task for a 6-year-old boy to do alone. He was always ashamed of his scroungy appearance. Even though Frank had many responsibilities and duties, he was paid very poorly. It was difficult for him to feed and clothe his family on his meager income. Joseph found himself feeling very hungry, very often. When he was an old man, Haydn greatly appreciated Frank for teaching him to play the violin and to sing so well, but he was sure that he had received more floggings than food from Frank. A flogging is a beating. It certainly was not the environment Matthias and Maria had imagined when they sent their son to Hainburg. These were not good circumstances for learning, but Joseph wanted to learn as much as he could about the music, so he didn't complain at all. He worked hard and was soon singing with the choir in church. The townspeople loved this little boy's crystal clear voice. One day, just before an important celebration, Frank's drummer suddenly became ill and died. Frank had to have a drummer to march in the parade, but there were none to be found, so Frank decided to teach Joseph to play the drum. He taught Joseph the beat pattern and then left him to practice it. Joseph tied an old cloth over a flower basket and pounded over and over until there was flour flying all over the room. Mrs. Frank was furious, but Frank was just relieved to have a drummer for the parade that day. When Haydn was 7, the famous conductor, Reuter, came from Vienna to find some new boys for his choir. Haydn was brought in and given a sheet of very difficult music to sightsing. Confidently, he sang it without a mistake the very first time, without having seen it before. Reuter was very impressed. When he learned that Joseph had never been taught how to trill, he gave the boy a quick lesson. Joseph listened and watched carefully, and then he tried. When he executed a trill, Reuter was delighted. He filled Haydn's pockets and hands with cherries that had been placed on the table. Then he asked Haydn to come to Vienna, the capital of Austria. Matthias and Maria decided that Haydn could go to Vienna when he turned 8 years old, in 9 months. How happy Haydn was! He diligently practiced his scales and arpeggios so that he would be ready when he arrived in Vienna. He could not forget all the wonderful cherries Reuter had given him. The food must be excellent in Vienna, he thought. However, Haydn was in for several surprises when he was finally old enough to go. First, Reuter was even busier than Frank had been. He wanted to be the Kapellmeister for the Empress Maria Theresa. He was her court composer already, but that was not enough. He wanted the highest position a musician could have in her court, the Kapellmeister. He had to write magnificent music for the Empress so that she would be pleased and appoint him to the Kapellmeister post. This left no time to give music lessons to any of the choir boys. In the 9 years that Haydn lived in Vienna at St. Stephen's Cathedral, he received only 2 lessons from Reuter. Lessons were not all that Haydn did not receive. Can you guess what else he didn't get? If he had been hungry in Hainburg, he was nearly starving now. But you remember, Joseph was pretty smart, and he learned soon after he arrived that the boys who sang the best were allowed to sing at the banquets of the wealthy. After they sang, they got to eat some of the food that was being served to the guests at these magnificent parties. Singing at these parties became very important to Joseph because then he could go to bed without being hungry. Thank you. Joseph loved music. When he received no help, he studied on his own. Every day when the other boys ran off to play, Haydn practiced alone on a small clavier. Now, a clavier was the forerunner of the piano. It's a small keyboard instrument. He tried to compose on his own as well. At that time, he thought that the more notes there were on a page, the better the composition was. One day, as he was working on a piece with 12 parts, Reuter saw him. When he looked at Haydn's notes spread all over the page, he laughed and laughed. "You foolish boy, why don't you write for just 2 parts?" he asked. Yet he didn't ever help Haydn with his composition. Haydn realized he knew nothing about the rules of composition. He wanted to learn so badly, but he didn't know where to turn for help. Finally, he was able to find a composition book, which he worked through very carefully on his own. Haydn was not all work. He liked to have fun once in a while, too. He had a mischievous streak, perhaps like you do, that got him into trouble several times in Vienna. Once, when the choir boys were waiting to sing for the Empress Maria Theresa, his choir master's boss, they spied some scaffolding towering next to the castle wall that had just been finished. Haydn quickly led the boys to it, and they began to climb higher and higher. Oh, how fun it was! Suddenly, the Empress stuck her head out of the window below the scaffolding to see what all the ruckus was. She became very frightened when she saw boys hanging all over the scaffolding like a jungle of monkeys. What if one of them fell? They were ordered down immediately and warned that if they ever climbed up the scaffolding again, they would be severely punished. Well, the next day, the boys were back at the castle. Joseph looked longingly at the scaffolding. It had been such fun to climb the day before. He could climb quietly so that the Empress wouldn't hear him. Quickly he scaled the scaffolding. He was silently performing his acrobatics when the Empress' head appeared out of the window again. Oh, brother, what luck! She angrily glared up at the fair-haired boy who was so disobedient. "Come down there from there immediately," she called. When Joseph arrived at the bottom, Reuter was there, waiting to give him the sound beating that the Empress had ordered. Joseph did not always displease the Empress, though. She truly enjoyed his clear, bright voice as he performed solos with the choir. There must have been many people who attended the church at St. Stephen's Cathedral who were also uplifted by the beautiful simplicity of Joseph's singing. His hours of practicing while the other boys were off playing were showing. Joseph was the best singer in the boys' choir. He worked hard at it, and that's why he was. Then, one day, as Joseph was singing for the Empress, his voice cracked on the notes. He was worried. What does it mean when a boy's voice cracks on the notes? It means his voice is changing, right? Oh, boy, there was nothing he could do to control it. He was turning into a man. After the performance, the Empress told Reuter, "That Haydn boy crows like a rooster." She was not pleased at all. This did not please Reuter either, for if the Empress was not happy, he would never get to be her Kapellmeister. He wanted to get rid of Joseph, but he couldn't just kick him out very easily without angering the Empress as well. He began to watch for anything Haydn might do to merit being kicked out of the choir. He also had to find a singer to replace Haydn. The singer soon surfaced. Haydn's younger brother, Michael, had come to St. Stephen's when he was 8. He had a wonderful voice, too, and he quickly learned to sing the solos superbly. At first, Joseph was glad to have his brother there. He took care of him and showed him all around. But when everyone began paying all the attention to Michael, Haydn became depressed. Empress Maria Theresa even gave Michael a golden box for his fine singing. Haydn was no longer needed. How do you suppose Haydn felt at this time? Now Reuter only had to wait for Joseph to do something wrong. He didn't have to wait very long. You remember Haydn's mischievous streak? One day, as the choir was rehearsing, Haydn pulled out a pair of scissors. The boy in front of him had a very long braid. Haydn carefully placed the hair between the blades and then quietly snip The braid fell to the floor. Reuter looked up and saw the fallen braid. He also saw Joseph quickly stuffing a pair of scissors behind his back. "Joseph Haydn, did you cut that braid off?" Reuter boomed.
Yes, sir,
came Joseph's timid reply. "You will be canned immediately in front of the school," the irate conductor said. Now, Joseph knew that canning was being beaten across the hand with a cane. He might not be able to practice his clavier. It was also a very humiliating punishment for a now 17-year-old Haydn. Immediately, Joseph retorted, "I'd rather leave this school than be canned." This infuriated Reuter even more. "All right, you will leave this school right after you've been canned." That cold November night in 1749, Joseph Haydn was thrown out into the streets with no food, no money, no place to stay, and a few miserable-looking items of clothing that were almost rags. What would you do? Probably the same thing that Joseph did. Just slowly scuffle along the street trying to decide what you should do. He could go home to his family in the small village, but if he did, he would become a wheelwright as his father was. And I guess he didn't want to go knocking on doors early Sunday morning making sure people were in church. No, going home to the old village meant giving up his study of music for the rest of his life. He would rather starve than give up music. The only problem was that he just might starve. Discouraged, he wandered, wondering what he, a young 17-year-old with a little musical training, could do to learn a living. Suddenly, he bumped into a man hurrying along. He looked up, and there was his good friend, a choir singer named Michael Spangler. When Spangler heard Joseph's story, he invited him to stay with he and his wife and their young son in their poor apartment. Haydn gratefully accepted. Spangler also helped Haydn to get a few students. Haydn worked many hours and then tried to study composition from the book he had. The Spanglers were very kind, but the apartment was crowded, and a new Spangler baby would be coming soon, so Haydn knew he needed to find another place to stay. He tried to earn enough money to rent another room, but the harder he tried, the harder it got. Something had to change fast. It was during this time that he heard about a wonderful church in a distant town. Their choir occasionally allowed new voices to sing with them. Joseph decided to go with a group that was journeying to this town. Maybe his luck would change. When he arrived in the town, he went to see the director of the choir. He told him his story and asked if he might sing with the choir. However, the father had been troubled one too many times by poor boys from Vienna who claimed to sing in order to get a free meal, but really didn't sing a note. He angrily told Haydn to skedaddle. Haydn left the room, but he didn't leave town. He believed in himself. He was sure that if this father heard him sing, he would surely let him sing with the choir. There was only one way to show the father that he could sing. That was during the church service. Joseph knew that the father couldn't throw him out right in the middle of the church meeting, so he crept up to the choir loft. There he found the soloist and begged to sing the solo. Now, if a stranger crept up just before a big performance and asked you to let him take your place, would you? Probably not. And this man didn't let Haydn either. Joseph had to sing that solo. He just had to. His stomach told him, if not his brain. When it came time for the solo, he jumped up, grabbed the music from the soloist, and he sang the solo so beautifully that everyone strained to glimpse this amazing new soloist. Haydn's plan worked. I don't suppose he was any too great friends with the soloist after that. However, the father did recognize him, came up to Haydn and apologized, and asked him to sing with the choir again. 1 week later, Joseph left for Vienna with some food in his belly, money, and restored confidence. When he arrived, more good fortune befell him. A friend of his father's, Anton Buchholz, lent Joseph 150 florins for as long as he needed it. It was not much, but it seemed like $1,000,000 to Haydn. Now he could afford his own room. Haydn never forgot this kindness, and he left 100 florins to a granddaughter of Buchholz in his will, even though he had diligently worked to pay back the loan in 1 year. Haydn's room was high in an attic. It was very small, very cold in the winter, and very hot in the summer, but it was cheap, and he had an old harpsichord in it. Haydn taught students all day long and then came home and studied composition long into the night. One night, he brought home a new book of keyboard sonatas to study. They were by Carl Philipp Emanuel Bach, the son of Johann Sebastian Bach. Haydn sat down at the keyboard. He played one. He practiced over and over and over until he had learned it perfectly. Then he began the next. He stayed up that night until he had learned all 6 sonatas. They were so exciting. After that, whenever he was discouraged, Haydn played one of these pieces, and hope returned once more. One of Haydn's students was a little girl named Marianne Martinez. She was also studying voice with a very prominent musician named Nicola Popora and needed an accompanist. When Haydn heard this, he jumped at the chance. Perhaps this great man could give him the composition lessons he desired so badly. An arrangement was worked out where Haydn accompanied all of Popora's students and ran errands for him. In return, Popora helped Haydn with his compositions. Popora was a cross old man, but Haydn gladly worked for him. For now he had a teacher. Steadily he improved, and soon his compositions were being played by several of the nobles of Vienna. In 1759, when he was 27, Haydn was hired as the composer for Count von Mortzen in Lukovec. The Count sponsored a concert for his friends where Haydn's first symphony was performed. Everyone enjoyed it immensely, especially the honored guest, Prince Paul Anton Esterhazy. He decided to take note of the name of the young composer in case he ever had a chance to hire him. Things were going very well for Haydn, but he was not completely happy. He was 27 years old, like I said before. He wanted to have a family of his own, so he began to look for a wife. He really liked one of his students named Teresa Keller, and he visited her house often. Just when Haydn had worked up the courage to ask her to marry him, Teresa decided to become a nun. Haydn was crushed, but he did not stop visiting the Kellers immediately. Soon, Teresa's father suggested that Haydn marry his oldest daughter, Maria Anna, who was 31 years old. No one knows why, but Haydn did it. Perhaps he thought Maria Anna would be just like Teresa. That was one of the biggest mistakes of his life. Joseph and Maria Anna had practically nothing in common. Perhaps the difference that caused the largest gap between them was music, the thing that was most important to Joseph. Joseph had spent his whole life studying music, and he loved it dearly. Maria, on the other hand, couldn't care less whether Joseph became a great composer or the Mark Richter like his father was. She had never had a chance to study music, and so she couldn't really understand his work. Haydn felt that he might be able to enjoy the situation if he and Maria could have some children. However, this was not to be. The Haydns, unable to have children, spent their long married life alone. Just after Haydn got married, Count von Mortzen began to have financial troubles. He could no longer afford to pay an orchestra, and so Haydn had no job. When Prince Paul Anton Esterhazy heard that Haydn was unemployed, he quickly snatched him up to be his assistant kapellmeister. Now, his present Kapellmeister was very old and had served him faithfully for many years. Prince Paul put Haydn in charge of everything. 4 years later, when the Kapellmeister died, Haydn officially became the Kapellmeister. Not long after Prince Paul hired Haydn, he died, and his brother Prince Nicholas the Magnificent became the prince. Prince Nicholas loved music. He loved all of the arts and wanted to have the very best in his palace. Prince Nicholas took a trip to France. There he saw the beautiful Palace of Versailles, which had been built by King Louis XIV. Prince Nicholas was amazed with what he saw. He decided he wanted to have a palace that was even bigger and better. When he returned home, he began planning immediately. He had a hunting lodge near a lake. The ground was very muddy. There were millions of insects all around. It was the worst place to build a huge, elegant palace, so Prince Nicholas decided to build it there, just to show how beautiful he could make it become. He named the castle Esterhaza. It was an unbelievable sight. One room had ebony-colored Japanese panels decorated with gold flowers. The chairs were covered with gold fabric. There was both an opera house and a marionette or puppet stage, since the prince loved puppets. There was also a park with waterfalls and statues galore behind the castle. Can you imagine putting waterfalls and statues all over your backyard? It cost over, now get this, $5 million to build Esterhaza. Spending much less money than this cost many aristocrats, including King Louis XVI, their heads, about 20 years later in France. But Prince Nicholas was very proud of his castle. He had other castles as well, but he began spending less time at them and most of the year at Esterhaza. Nicholas wanted to have the biggest and best orchestra at his new castle. So Haydn always hired 16 to 22 musicians for the orchestra. Compared to our modern orchestra, this seems kind of small, but in Haydn's day, an orchestra was usually 8 to 10 people. The musicians loved to work with Haydn, for he was kind, yet he firmly insisted on perfection. He made the musicians want to do their best. He was a kind man. He cared more about them than what they could produce musically. He cared about them as people. They soon began calling him Papa Haydn, because they loved him so much. Prince Nicholas paid these excellent musicians very well, but he only allowed them one room each to live in the castle. Most of the musicians were married and had children at home. At first, they brought their families to Esterhaza and tried to keep them in their small room, but it got too noisy. Prince Nicholas forbade any of the musicians to bring their families to Esterhaza at all. The longer the prince stayed at Esterhaza, the longer the musicians were away from their families, whom they loved and missed very much. Finally, they asked Haydn to help them, for he seemed to know how to ask the prince for something without upsetting him. You just don't go to the king or the prince and ask them for anything. Haydn wanted to leave Esterhaza too, for he missed seeing his good friends in Vienna, especially the Genzinger family and his new young composer friend, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. He felt Mozart was the greatest composer of the day. Mozart also thought Haydn was a wonderful composer. Haydn knew it would be not wise to ask the prince if the musicians could leave. Instead, he came up with another plan. Now, in those days, when you wanted to hear some music, you just couldn't go turn on a stereo or turn on the radio or put on your Walkman. If you wanted music, there were only a few ways that you could get it. You could sing it yourself, you could go to church, or if you were very wealthy, like the prince was, you could have your own private orchestra. Now, there was no electricity. And so, to get light in their castles, they would have candles. Now, next to each music stand, the musicians would have a candle propped there so they could see their music. Now, the next evening, after the musicians talked to Haydn about coming up with a plan, Prince Nicholas sat listening to a new symphony Haydn had composed for him. The slow movement was very unusual. As they would play, all of a sudden, one of the instrumentalists got up, blew out his candle, picked up his instrument, and walked out. Then a little bit later, another musician stood up, blew out his candle, picked up his music and his instrument, and walked out. One by one, each of the musicians stopped playing, blew out their candles, and walked out. Until finally, there was just one violinist and Haydn left. Suddenly, Prince Nicholas began laughing. He understood what his clever Kapellmeister was trying to say. "Tell the musicians we'll leave for Vienna tomorrow," he told Haydn. This symphony has been called the Farewell Symphony ever since. Haydn enjoyed his work, but he was beginning to grow tired of it. He had worked for Prince Nicholas for nearly 30 years now. He was now famous all over the world and had received many invitations to visit different parts of Europe, but the prince wouldn't let him go. Then in 1790, Prince Nicholas died. His son, Prince Anton, did not love music as his father had. He kept Haydn as Kapellmeister, but only asked him to write a few compositions a year. This meant Haydn was free to see the world. He was trying to decide which invitation to accept when one day a stranger appeared at his door. He only said, "My name is Solomon, and I've come to take you to London." This surprised Haydn. What would he do in England? He knew no one, and he definitely did not speak English. But the more he thought about it, the more enthralled he was with the idea. Soon he found himself on his way to England with Solomon, against the advice of Mozart and his other friends.